Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, welcome to Concussion Talk Podcast, episode 137. I'm on with Dr. Daniel Raffi, who is a neurologist at the UCLA Brain Sport Program, and I'm very excited to talk to him about Brain Sport at UCLA, Steve Tisch Brain Sport Program. And we'll get right to that, but first I will thank my sponsor, Headshake Health. Headshake Health bridges gaps in concussion care through simple, powerful technology. Join organizations like Canadian Football League, Park Factory Racing, the Canadian Junior Hockey League, Eastern Washington University, and Volleyball Canada, who rely on HeadCheck to improve communication and optimize care. Visit HeadCheckHealth.com for more. I zoomed through that, so Harrison, I apologize, and that was pretty fast. But before that, please, subscribe, rate, and view, support the podcast. You can also support it by going to, because this will come out on November 22nd, which will be the day that the sale, 40% off sale for the Concussion Talk store. Go to concussiontalk.com, the store page, and it'll take you to TeePublic, and you can get everything. So hoodies, obviously, which I have on. T-shirts, mugs, blah, 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 all the stuff. And you search the store, and it'd be great if you could support the podcast that way. And they can, guys, you find this podcast for VGET Podcast and on Good Pods. And I really zoomed to all this, but I wanted to talk to Dan and about your the program. So thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks, buddy. Number 137. You've been doing this for quite some time. I'm honored and humbled to be here. Absolutely.
Thanks, Tom. Thank you so much. Yeah. So it's been about seven years now, just over 7 years. And so I know, because you guys do a great podcast too, which, I mean, if anyone doesn't know, the US UCLA Steve Tisch Brain Sport Program. So Brain Sport Podcast, and which Dan is the host of. So, well, first, I'll get to ask you if you can just tell us what the UCLA Steve Tisch Brain Sport Program is about and what SPORT stands for. And it's an acronym, not necessarily just the name of the word, but it's an acronym. So can you tell us what that's all about?
Yeah, so, the UCLA Brain Sport Program was founded for a couple of different things and a couple of different missions. I think, the first one is to be able to provide optimal concussion care to athletes and to really anyone that's had a concussion. And the timeline doesn't really matter. We see acute concussions, but most of our patients are patients that have had a concussion that have been symptomatic for, quite some time. We have patients that have been symptomatic for 3 months up to a year. I've seen patients that have had their symptoms persistent for several years. And what we bring to the table is, cutting edge research, as well as a multidisciplinary team to be able to, appropriately treat these patients and all the ailments that they have. But I think that's the primary mission, but then also, where we are and I, you know, I might be biased when I say this, but I think that we're one of the, you know, nation's leaders in research specifically in the concussion field. You know, we got a lot of research going on, and that's one of the missions to really advance our understanding of what's going on in a concussion, but then also, you know, how to treat it through our research. But then also another mission of the program is to, you know, a community outreach, right? So being able to get out there in the community, being able to educate people on, you know, what a concussion is, what it isn't, what are the, you know, results of having a concussion, what they aren't, and then, you know, what you should be doing. And also of brain health, right? It's not, you know, certainly our wheelhouse is concussion, but then also, you know, we're big advocates and, you know, we like to educate the community regarding overall brain health. What are things that you should be doing to optimize your brain health and optimize your brain functioning?
Right. And with that, I mean, the SPORT stands for Safety, Prevention, Outreach, Research, and Treatment. And which Dan just covered eloquently, I must say. But you said the outreach to the community, so that includes just whoever is listening to the podcast, whoever's listening or reading the web for UCLA Brain Sport. But I mean, your direct community is LA and UCLA. UCLA is a big school, isn't it? Like 100,000 or so? It's like, it's a large, huge school, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a huge school. It is, I think, the number one most applied to public university in the entire country.
Yikes.
But I don't know the exact number of students that we have. You caught me on that question, buddy.
Yeah, I don't know.
But you're right. It's like our outreach mission, you know, was not only checking out the website, but initially before COVID, it was, you know, going around to the community and putting on presentations. We have, you know, every year we put on the Concussion Champions course, right? Which you can get, you can get like educational credits to come to our program and, you know, listen to our presentations all about concussion, what goes on in concussion, how to appropriately treat it, and the future direction of concussion research. We also do baseline exams for different high schools in the area. We cover the sideline for Venice High School. And in those activities, we're also educating the community, right? Like, we're not only just doing baseline exams, we're also doing some individual educating along that. But then, you know, where the podcast comes in is, you know, when COVID hit, you know, all those measures were really, really restricted, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we came up with the idea of, you know, let's do a podcast. You know, it won't be necessarily restricted too much by COVID and all the limitations that we had regarding that. But then also, you know, think about putting it online, being able to educate people in perpetuity, right?
Yes.
So, you know, whereas our presentations, if they're not recorded on your cell phone, for example, right, is kind of like, oh, well, what did he say during that presentation? So on and so forth. So what the podcast allows is people to be able to watch it and go back and watch it again if they had any questions.
Podcast more like evergreen.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then it's available to anyone, right?
Yeah.
Not only nationally, but internationally.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's great. And you were in, before we started recording, you were saying you are a neurologist and in John Call actually. So hopefully we'll be able to have Dan for the whole show, but he may be maybe rushed away. So, in the meantime, you were saying that you were part of the program of UCLA. You came through UCLA, the brain support program. And also I read that high schools are also, you pick 3 or 4 high school students a year who come in the summer, I guess, obviously.
Who come excellent point. We also take on undergraduate and high schoolers that want to come have experience and volunteer. So volunteers are certainly a big support of our program. You can get involved with a lot of the different activities that we're doing, which, you know, are many. You can get involved in our research and, you know, you can learn a lot. I think it's an excellent, awesome experience. And then you also get mentored by, you know, some really intelligent people like Chris Giza, Kevin Bickhardt, Mirio Che, you know, a lot of, you know, national leaders in their field. So I think it's an excellent, excellent opportunity.
Definitely. I mean, sounds amazing. And it's certainly a lot of great resources. Like we were just talking before about Chris Giza, who I don't know, but I know through on who he is on Twitter and through other contacts I had in the DPT world. But yeah, but you and obviously as a neurologist, you knew about concussion. I heard you interviewing a fair name of the Oregon soccer player you're doing a while ago. She had concussions and it's a great podcast. So definitely check any of the podcasts out of Brain Sport. But of course, let's just listen to this one first and then go find these Brain Sport podcasts or pause, just download this box, then go to that one. But anyway, either way.
Download this one first.
Yes.
Right? Watch this one all the way through and then maybe go on if you guys have time.
But just in case, download those ones. Just in case you don't have time, download them first.
And then when you come on mine, they'll watch mine. We'll make sure they watch the Brain Sport podcast first and then come over to this one.
Exactly. Yeah. That's we got it all planned out. Don't worry about it. But what you started, were you the first host? I saw that. I kind of know because I watched them, but I mean, you were the first host of the Brain Sport podcast, and what have you, and the only host. So obviously, as I was trying to say beforehand, but I got sort of distracted. You learned a lot about concussions in your education, and through your mentors in the program. But what have you learned via the podcast about concussions, about, say, the lasting symptoms, the PCS, persistent concussion syndrome, or post-concussion syndrome, whatever you'd like to call it. But what have you learned about concussion through the podcast?
So I've learned a lot about concussion through the podcast. That's an excellent point. I think, you know, the podcast has made me, because, you know, as the host, I have guests that are, you know, pretty much every guest is some sort of expert or world leader in something, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I might be biased, but they all just tend to be UCLA faculty.
Yeah.
And certainly that puts a lot of pressure on me to be prepared and have sort of a certain foundational understanding going into the episode. And doing that, holding myself to that sort of like higher expectation has really, you know, improved my understanding of concussion, understanding of all those topics that we talk about. And I think overall, a better clinical neurologist, you know? But I think, you know, also we got to give shout out to the fellowship, right? So I went through the sports neurology, traumatic brain injury, and concussion fellowship at UCLA. So although I'm still learning a lot, and I have learned a lot through the podcast, I think where my most understanding of concussion comes from is from that awesome, awesome 2-year fellowship that I did at the UCLA Brain Sport program. And, you know, I've learned a lot, right? Like, what do you want to talk about? I think that, you know, what I've been finding, and again, I might have a skewed view because most of the patients that I see are, you know, what we call persistent post-concussion symptoms, right?
Yeah.
And I think the reason that we call it PPCS versus PCS, I mean, it means the same thing. You know, if you call it PCS, it's not a wrong thing, but I think what persistent post-concussion symptom implies is that, you know, there's some exacerbated factors that are persistent rather than an underlying injury that's continuous, which some people might think that with the term post-concussion syndrome, right? Although, you know, there's a lot of contention to it and stuff like that, but that's just a term that we prefer. And, you know, what I've learned is that there's a lot of people out there with persistent post-concussion symptoms after their concussion. Right. And what I've learned is that not every PPCS patient is the same. It seems like what's happening is a lot of them are coming in with clusters of symptoms. Right. So one group will come in with, you know, primarily headaches, migraines that are persistent. The other one will come in with significant cognitive symptoms that are persistent. The other one, psychological. Right. Different stuff like that. So, you know, so because of that, then we need to start grouping these patients into what we call phenotypes, right? Which means, okay, well, you know, can we group these patients into the kind of symptom cluster that they're coming in with, and then target appropriate therapy that would be best for them, considering the symptom cluster that they're coming in with?
That we know, and, that we can see,
exactly. And the, and that's sort of a transition into the research that we're doing with the Care for Kids research. It's this $10 million multi-center grant that UCLA is a part of that is doing that, right? So we're taking pediatric concussion patients and we're grouping them into, we're trying to, you know, group them into these different symptom clusters, and also doing physiological metrics after their concussion, like heart rate variability, their end-tidal CO2 level, their cognitive function, different stuff like that, to be able to delineate, okay, can we say we have a migraine symptom cluster, we have a cognitive symptom cluster, we have a psychological symptom cluster. And if we're able to cluster those, then we're able to figure out what's the optimal treatment for these clusters of patients, and then we can institute that. So that's where I see, the future research and future clinical care of concussion and persistent symptoms headed in.
Is that your, because I know actually, one of my friends, a good friend, but I've never actually met, but she's a DPT in Utah, Lauren Zayaks, and her colleague, well, not really colleagues, not work together, but they're just, we're writing papers that they just presented at the beginning of this month in Chicago at the ACRM about dysautonomia. And because she suffers from that, because she's had a bunch of questions and suffers. I don't like that word suffers, and I don't think she did either, but she experiences that. And so they've done a lot of work about dysautonomia, and that when you talk about your heart variability and those issues, and I know then blood pressure and stuff, and those are all the areas that you find interesting. In your, are you doing research yourself into those areas, or are you just report on stuff, or do you amalgamate all the information, or do you?
So I think that is an extremely interesting field, the dysautonomia field. And I think it's something that a lot of patients that are persistent particularly are suffering from. We have a lot of patients that come in with, and we diagnose them with POTS, right?
The postural, we have POTS, but it's not going to be just postural something. I know orthostatic.
So it's postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome.
Right,
tachycardia. The underlying issue involved with that is a dysautonomia, right? Yeah. Where your sympathetic nervous system is a little bit more hyperactive than it should be, right? So there's this imbalance between your sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system that, you know, when you stand up, so POTS is usually diagnosed when you change positions, right? So like when you go from sitting to standing, laying to sitting, that your heart rate just jacks up, right?
Yeah.
It'll jack up like greater than 20 beats per minute, right? And the reason for that, the theory for that reason is because your sympathetic nervous system just is hyperactive. So it just dumps all, you know,
assumes all that you're like in flight already.
Exactly.
Yeah,
absolutely. So I think dysautonomia in concussion, especially in persistent symptoms, certainly seems to be an issue, right? Because I mean, you can then like extrapolate that out to not only, you know, it affecting your heart, but then what does a hyperactive sympathetic nervous system cause, you know, in your day-to-day life, right? Can it contribute to hypervigilance? Can it contribute to anxiety? What kind of symptoms that you're having in your PPCS are they contributing to, right? It can be a lot of different things, you know? So I think that I'm super excited and very glad that there's research going into it, because certainly we got to figure out some treatments for a hyperactive sympathetic nervous system. And that's where HRV comes in too, right? Being able to measure HRV. HRV is a good measure for
heart rate variability.
Heart rate variability, but that measures the dynamic nature of your autonomic nervous system, right?
Yeah.
So if you have if you have too hyperactive of a sympathetic nervous system and it's persistently hyperactive, then your HRV isn't going to be, you know, as optimal as it should be, right? So potentially HRV would be a really, really good measure to ensure a balanced autonomic nervous system.
I always like dysautonomia and HRV are like just almost one of the same, aren't they?
So HRV, I think, so HRV is a measure, right? It's a physiological measure of your heart's ability to dynamically go up or increase in rate and then decrease in rate.
I remember because Lauren and Jenna, who had on a podcast not too long ago in September, who were the ones who presented in Chicago in earlier this month in November, they're saying that like they do Buffalo treadmill tests for her and measure obviously heart rate, and it was like.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
They'd be walking or barely moving, but all they're going to climb their heart and be like at like 190 or something. And then they do, they compare it to what it was. And then when you're, when you're going nuts, it's just when you're, what the whole thing was, it's like, if you're barely moving, your heart rate is like way high. And if you're like going crazy, you can't go crazy because that's crazy you can go. But I mean,
right.
I still was like, 110 or 150.
Right. So that makes sense, right? Because your brain is telling, if you start doing any sort of exercise, right?
Yeah.
Your brain senses that as, all right, we got to increase the heart rate because it's anticipating, increased cardiovascular demand, right? So because of that, if you have a hyperactive or any sort of dysautonomia where your sympathetic nervous system is hyperactive, right? That totally makes sense, right?
Yeah.
It's activating the sympathetic nervous system as it should, but because it's hyperactive, it's, overshooting how much it should be activating it.
Yeah. Right?
So then, again, you think about other places in your life where that could be affected, like your sleep, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Sympathetic nervous system is supposed to be something that is active, evolutionarily when you were running away from a lion, right?
Yeah.
When you're laying in bed trying to sleep,
should be shut up.
Right, yeah. Exactly, right? But in a dysautonomic context, right, certainly, that can lead to issues with your sleep and that can contribute to issues with your sleep, so.
Yeah, no, I never didn't have a concussion per se. I had a severe brain injury, I had a lot of trouble with sleeping, either too much or not enough. And that's, like you said, like that is just like symptoms of dysautonomia. So either my system was like, it's going crazy, like it should have been shut down, or it's not going crazy enough, or it's shut down even when it should be more hyper or more vigilant than it is, even though I was never in a lion, but I mean.
in more severe TBI,
yeah,
right, in more severe TBI, sorry, the sympathetic dysautonomia is more severe, is what we've noticed, right? I forget the term exact. I think it's paroxysmal sympathetic disorder or something like that. You guys can look it up. Your audience members can look it up. But it's a known thing. It happens. I mean, it's not that common, but it happens, you know, and it's very typical for it to happen. And like the symptoms are so frank, man. Like people will get flush. They'll be tremulous, right? And again, that's secondary to that really severe dysautonomia, right, that we see in more moderate and severe traumatic brain injury.
Right.
But, you know, like a lot of things that we're finding in the pathophysiology of traumatic brain injury, you know, can we scale that back to a more mild sort of pathophysiological sense in a more milder traumatic brain injury, like concussion?
Yeah.
Right? That's what this sort of sympathetic nervous system dump seems to be, right? Where it's like severe, it's like in severe TBI, it's like severe sympathetic hyperactivity, right? But in more milder, right, seems like there's still an element of dysautonomia, maybe not as severe as severe traumatic brain injury, that what we see in severe traumatic brain injury, but certainly there's still an element to that that can A, exacerbate symptoms and impair functionality. You know what I mean?
And I mean, this, I could just, obviously, because I've had a severe traumatic brain injury, so I could go on to this, talk with this stuff forever, but and even disautonomia, that disautonomia is a bit of a side rail there, but I want to ask you about more about the return to play, return to learn, return to sport like that. Have you, what is your research in your, let's say your clinic, but in the UCLA brain sport, what do you guys find is the main issue in, say, your patients? Do you find that you want to get them down to good way to return to sport? Like, when should they return to learn, return to sport? When would you want to see them happy to do that?
Yeah, so I think first off, you know, for our students, we say we're not starting you in the return to play until you can return to learn.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that's first and foremost, you got to be able to be back in school and be back to school at, you know, pretty much full functionality in school before we consider starting you into any sort of return to play protocol.
Yeah.
So to start talking about the return to learn protocol, I think, you know, what we say after a concussion, a lot of research has shown that it's important to start sub-threshold aerobic activity, you know, within 48 to 72 hours after you've had a concussion, right?
Yeah.
Evidence has shown that that can actually decrease the duration of your concussion, right? Yeah. And the study that did it 80%, basically 80%, the sub-symptom threshold activity was 80% of the heart rate where you would have symptoms, right? Mm-hmm. For your audience, that's a really good place to start. 80% heart rate of the heart rate that you have, you know, that you have symptom exacerbation at. That's really important. Start that by day 2 to day 3, right? Obviously, making sure that you're doing so in a safe manner. Also, screen time, right? So there's some evidence that's come out that, you know, screen time can actually prolong your concussion, right? Now, it's not black and white, right? Where it's not one or the other, where it's like no screens or lots of screens, right? It should be a moderation of screens, you know? So sitting in front of a TV, sitting in front of, you know, I don't know, Xbox or whatever all day isn't something you should be doing. Yeah. Again, sitting in a dark room and avoiding all screens all the time isn't something you should be doing either. There's certainly a moderation, and making sure that that moderation is instituted for at least 72 hours, those two things, that's a good place to start for your concussion recovery, right? And then, you know, for return to learn, you know, when you start thinking about ways to appropriately return to learn, it's pretty much the same as return to play and return to activity, where you want to do so in a stepwise manner, right? So usually what I recommend people to do is start working your cognition a little bit at about day 3 or day 4 with, you know, some puzzles, right? Nothing too strenuous, just start working your cognition, your cognitive capabilities with some puzzles around the house. And then when you get back to school, right, that's going to really involve a lot of like a teamwork approach between the doctor, your parents, and the school personnel and the caregivers, right?
Yeah.
Where, you know, there should be accommodations in school, right? Because you don't want to strain too much, both from a cognition and a physical activity standpoint.
Yeah.
You don't want to strain too much because certainly that can also prolong concussion, right? And when you're back in school, for caregivers and teachers out there, I would recommend they check out the CDC. They have some really, really good strategies for teachers and school staff to be able to institute for their concussion patients, right? If you know the kids had a concussion, these are some things that you can do to help them along the way, right? And one of the things that they describe is sort of starting off with like really light cognitive activity, right? That doesn't necessarily include academic content, but rather just like flexible thinking, organization, different things like that, just to start them off on the return to learn process.
Yeah.
And then be able to identify, you know, what pieces of their academic content are they having trouble with due to their symptoms, and maybe shying away from those and leaning more on some of the other content where they might not be having that big of an issue. You know, at the end of the day, it's going to require a team approach along that pathway. But, and then the last thing is, if you're finding that, you know, the kid is having a really, really hard time, don't hesitate to put him on, you know, a 504 plan or an official IEP plan to help them along the way.
What's a 504 plan?
So a 504 plan is just like a system that's instituted in the school to be able to make sure that that student is being provided with appropriate accommodations due to their concussion and due to their symptoms.
Okay, we're trying to, I know I'm not in the U.S., first of all, but I'm in Canada, but we're trying to get a protocol going here, or get more discussion when school is here, which is sort of lacking in Purdue's Land Lover Brain Association, which I'm on the board of. We're trying to get that going through, and these things like when kids have had a concussion, if they feel supported in school and they get some sort of adaptive measures that can happen for them. But we're talking about return to sport, like what you can do that, but screen time a lot. I mean, also, I would say socially, but what do you know of, or have you guys done any research, or do you suggest that people do with the social interaction after a congestion? Shouldn't sit in a dark room, shouldn't avoid all activity, but what should they do for in terms of social interaction, like talking to friends on the phone, or I guess not, I don't talk as much anymore, but on Zoom or whatever.
Yeah. So look, I think that overall, whether it's like return to sport, return to learn, you really want to be able to get these kids back to a sense of normalcy.
Yeah. Right?
That is super, super important. The effect psychologically of having a concussion is pretty substantial, especially if you haven't had a concussion before.
Yeah.
Right. So you want to be able to bring a sense of normalcy to any kid that's had a concussion. Right. And I think social interaction with friends is a key to feeling that normalcy, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's super important. And also sort of like back to school thing, you know, I mentioned sort of the cognitive support, but also there's got to be support there psychologically and emotionally.
Yeah. Right?
Where if a kid's getting frustrated, you know, acknowledge that frustration, which is understandable.
Yeah.
Right. And encourage and motivate, you know, the student to, you know, potentially move past it.
One thing I love about on your podcast, but it's a lot of things, but like one thing is that you always I remember watching it's one with the woman from the Oregon soccer team talking about how and there's more than that, but also just not to just, I mean, concussions do happen in sport and soccer and football and hockey or baseball, soccer, we'll soccer a lot and football a lot and hockey a lot. Jeez. But
concussions happen a lot.
Yeah, exactly. But it just, they do happen a lot, but you know, the sport is just, there's just something about activity, whether it's sport or it's competitive sport or just doing a good activity with their friends. I mean, concussions will happen, but I mean, don't avoid those activities altogether. There's so much benefit to get from those activities. Just make sure, as the first S of sport says, please be safe and prevention, of course. So,
yeah. And let me hammer that point home, because that's an excellent point, man. It's, you know, sport has a lot of benefits, right?
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, we're talking about the risks now, and you mentioned them, and you know, we need to acknowledge those, but we also need to acknowledge the flip side, the benefits of it, right? These build not only lifelong lessons of, you know, discipline, motivation, resiliency, you know, but they also build social structure.
Yeah, camaraderie. Right?
Camaraderie, right, yeah. Exactly. A lot of things, you know, that I personally experienced, you know, growing up playing sports, right? And a lot of people have too. So, you know, I think it's very, very important to note that for the viewers and for anybody else out there.
Yeah, no, I was injured actually cycling. I was injured during sport. I know cycling is not the social is, well, it gets much more advanced, but not my level. It wasn't that social, but it was still, I did it with I only ever cycled with like four or five friends or with like two or three others. I mean, it was social in that aspect, even though you're alone on a bike and swimming is alone in the water and you're with your thoughts, but I play water polo, and that's water polo is very social. Obviously, because you same any other sport like basketball, same thing. And I can't. And obviously, the health benefits of just physical health benefits of being involved in sport are just enormous as well. And so I just
And that's the thing, right? Like, even if it's not a team sport, certainly team sports have benefits, right? Like teamwork, working with other people to be able to accomplish a goal. But then also even these solo sports, right? It teaches that there's no one else out there other than you, and you're the one that has to accomplish this goal that you've set out to do. No one's coming to help you. It's got to be you, right? So that in and of itself builds a sense of resiliency that you then carry over to other parts of your life, right?
Which I think I did. I hope I did, at least in my recovery.
You seem to have. That's and, for sure.
Thank you. But again, I think I did get built to confidence and everything. So, I mean, it's just so important just to be involved in, whether or not maybe you don't like sports, but like be involved in some activity with the group. And if you're not involved in sports, just find some way to stay healthy and stay active and be involved. Hopefully, team sports, I think, are just a great could not cure all, because that's a dangerous term, but still better kind of is.
Being part of a band, right?
Yeah.
Like being in an orchestra, right? You're working together to make something beautiful.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And I think that has its advantages too.
Yeah. Like acting, like if you're in like a play, if you're in like writing, but writing is, but writing it, editors and people who critique your writing and stuff like that. So anything, just find something that's involved with other people, and you don't just sit there and get depressed about the concussion. And that's so I'm kind of rambling now, because I don't really know how to end this. But Dan, do you have anything else? Anything you want to ask me or anything you wanted to say to your listeners, my listeners, or anybody who's listening to this one? Or so.
You know, you asked me a little bit about, you know, some of the research that we're doing. So
yeah,
I already gave a shout out to the Care for Kids grant, which honestly, I think is going to revolutionize pediatric concussion and overall concussion care. Fingers crossed. Dr. Gies is one of the leaders on that, so I have a lot of confidence on that. Shout out to the entire Brain Sport leadership, Josh Goldman, who's the UCLA football physician, Chris Giza, Muriel Che, all of them, they're really excellent, excellent physicians, researchers, and just people in general. We're also doing, or not we, but Kevin Bickhart, my colleague at BrainSport, he's also doing he just got a $3 million Department of Defense grant to study transcranial magnetic stimulation in the context of persistent post-concussion symptoms. So, potentially revolutionary.
I don't suppose you can leak his hypothesis on that one.
I'll let you interview him for that, man. It's really, okay. He's presented it before, right? Yeah. He's incorporating functional MRI, transcranial magnetic stimulation, and then behavioral outcomes of people's persistent post-concussion symptom to see if, he can improve the symptoms and correlate that with improved connectivity on an fMRI. Again, you can talk to him. Yeah. I'm probably not doing it justice. I'm doing research in CBD, so cannabidiol, seeing if that can improve, persistent post-concussion symptoms as well. There's like a whole longitudinal thing that we're publishing for that. So that's super exciting. And then the BrainSport podcast, we're going to continue doing it. We're all super excited about it. So if anyone wants to check it out, please check it out.
I was going to ask you, once your next episodes are due in, and what are they on, or what do you have, what have you recorded, but also what's coming up in for BrainSport podcast?
Yeah. So, some super exciting episodes coming out. We try to release one every month, with subsequent, short clips from each episode over the next weeks. You can find that on the official UCLA Health YouTube channel. I think like you said it before, if you just type in UCLA BrainSport podcast into YouTube, it'll come up. You'll see the whole playlist come up. One window you click it, the whole playlist comes up. The next episode to be released will be on stem cells, specifically in the context of brain injury, with our guest is going to be Dr. Carmichael, who is the chair of the Department of Neurology at UCLA, and lo and behold, a world expert on stem cell research, specifically in the context of brain injury. We have another one coming out regarding creativity. Where does creativity come from? How can we enhance creativity? Can we leverage it for brain injury? We also have a stress and resiliency podcast coming out with Dr. Slavik, who's the director of the UCLA Stress Lab. And then we also have one coming out regarding the importance of the quote unquote down state and the importance of sleep. That's with Dr. Sarah Mednick out of the University of California, Irvine. So we got a couple of them
coming out. Yeah, a lot of confidence. They all sound like, especially the creativity one. And it sounds also those stem cells too, but I'm just interested in the creativity one. I think it just sounds so interesting to me about just breaking how it helps, or how it not necessarily helps, but how what it does for brain injury and other things. So I think that's just very interesting one. I think encourage my listener and anyone who's listening, and also who's just listening for the first time, to check out UCLA Steve Tisch BrainSport program and the BrainSport podcast, which is just go to Google or Yahoo or
Who's not. I don't think Yahoo exists anymore.
No, I said that. It's like, that's no, you can't go to Yahoo, but can't it be just Google? Is it? I guess so.
I think it's like Bing. They got Bing.
Right, sorry. Yeah, Bill Gates.
And Safari.
Yes, I'm gonna Bill Gates again. Let me know. But it's a search engine. Let's just say, get search BrainSport podcast, and you'll find. You'll find Dr. Dan Rathies or Dr. Raffi or Dan, or I'm sure he goes by
whatever y'all want to call me.
He's on the podcast, and it's a great podcast. And I look forward to hearing these other episodes that are coming up. And if you haven't heard anything that's coming up, or check out the past ones, and they're all great. And we were saying before, they're like evergreen. So just even if the day, if there's some, the more recent ones obviously weren't today with research, but the old ones are still viable to listen to, and not that old, they're only 2 years old, so it's not like it's changed tremendously. But thank you so much for being on this podcast, and I hope good luck with yours, and I hope the research and getting called away for on call today. So that's
I warned you I was on call and I might have to step away. You said it might be an interesting twist to the podcast. But I'm glad I was able to make the time for you, man. I think what you're doing is amazing. Thanks, I think you as a person is amazing. What you do is amazing. And I hope you keep it up.
I plan to. I mean, since I get some support, I mean, I plan to. And so far it's been great. And I think what you guys are doing, I love what sport stands for in your thing is just in your name of your podcast is just so, I think that's just what I was going for with my podcast. And obviously I don't have the same facilities in my apartment to do research and stuff, but I like the attitude and everything that's going to this and the keeping staying healthy with the brain health, and also just enjoy life, enjoy sports. Just because you're gonna get concussions pretty much anywhere, anytime, but you can. Now you're going to be a kid, so just enjoy. Still be active. Still go and do things, and just know that that's a risk, and understand that when someone has a concussion or a traumatic brain injury, that. It's not just a bump in the head or something. You can just shake off and just lie down for a second to be fine. But that there are symptoms and consequences. So be magnanimous, but be supportive. Understand.
Supportive is a nice term. I think I think supportive is a nice term. And I'll agree with you 100%, man. Certainly it's a risk of sport. And if it does happen, then you need to take it seriously and you need to be able to provide the appropriate supportive care and intervention to make sure that someone has the best chance to be able to make that recovery as quickly and as safely as possible.
That's a great, great way in this podcast. So thank you so much. And I think that's a great point. And I will have all the links. Is there a link to UCLA Brain Support podcast that you know of? Or I'll just put all of it in the podcast description. But if there's a link that you, or a Twitter feed or Instagram feed or a Facebook feed or whatever.
Yeah, I can send, do you want me to send you the link where the playlist is?
I'll include that in the description. So check out the description for all the great Brain Support podcast links. And thanks so much, Dan.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it. Stay safe.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.